The Hard Bop Grand Pop, the title track of jazz pianist Horace Silver's 1996 album. Horace Silver was an American jazz pianist, composer, arranger, and particularly known for his hard bop style, which he pioneered in the 1950s. Born of an African-American mother and a Cape Verdean father, who emigrated to the United States when he was a young man. Claudio Roditi on trumpet and flugelhorn, Steve Torrey, my favorite trombone player, Michael Brecker on tenor sax, Ronnie Kuber on baritone sax, and Ron Carter on bass, with Louis Nash on drums. Horace Silver died at the age of 85 on June the 18th, 2014. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead, and we pick up the pace again with the Clinton Foundation, Over the Top, Yet Under the Radar. You can read most any informational material on the Clinton Foundation about what it does and what a laundry list of projects and initiatives it has spawned all over the world do. And you'd probably reach for your checkbook right away to give some support to those initiatives, to their, as they call them, good works. But as we've been talking here on Lead Stories with our very special guide, Charles Ortel, at charlesortel.com, C-H-A-R-L-E-S, Ortel, O-R-T-E-L.com, the Clinton Foundation and its affiliated spin-offs may be the largest case of charities fraud yet. Several concurrent probes, and others are developing as I speak, have the foundation and its top officers in the legal crosshairs for running what is believed to be an intricately designed slush fund operating under the guise of philanthropy. The foundation, investigators contend, for years has been a clearinghouse for donations from foreign governments and well-placed corporations and individuals seeking political favors from Bill and Hillary Clinton. Charles Ortel, a financial expert and investor who independently has been investigating the operations of the Clinton Foundation and its related entities, has been detailing for us on Lead Stories his contention that the foundation for years has been engaging in massive charities fraud. And he's back with us today. Thanks, Charles, for being with us today. We gave you a little rest there.
It's my great pleasure, Utrice, and I'm reaching you here from the center of hell in Washington, D.C.
The center of hell. What's going on in Washington, D.C.?
Well, back in May, I noticed that Marsha Blackburn, she likes to be called Congressman, but Congressman Marsha Blackburn had gotten involved because she sits on a committee that regulates the Federal Trade Commission, which is the principal regulator of U.S. charities. And she had been after the Clinton Foundation ever since last year, 2015, to come clean. She and a number of other very courageous people successfully brought down what until now had been the largest charity fraud, the so-called Texas or Tennessee Cancer Charity Frauds Complex, which is sort of a similar idea, a family getting together, asserting that people in Africa need cancer medicine. It sounds like a great thing. Money pours in. There are no controls. No one knows what happens to the money. And this particular family absconded with the money, so that charity was shut down. So I noticed that her courageous work. I noticed that she was very persistent and that she had, you know, quite a team looking at this. So I reached out to her staff, and ever since May, I've been in close touch with them. I just met with them moments ago. And these are people who, you know, who I think, like you, Utrice, and like your many listeners who might be on the progressive side of the aisle, we all agree, I think, and can agree, that charity fraud, that is to say, you know, when people get together and claim that they are doing something charitable, but elect not to organize it properly, not to operate it lawfully, not to ever get it audited, nobody really knows what's going on with all this money that's poured towards the Clinton Foundation. But everybody knows that certainly Bill is one of the most gifted talkers around. I mean, he can make, a death sentence sound like a pleasure cruise. So, it's great to hear that Bill and people who speak with fluted tongue are describing all the great things that the Clinton Foundation in theory does. Where's the proof of that? Where are the reports that are supposed to be filed, the audits, the legally compliant audits that are supposed to have been filed since the first day of this foundation in 97? There isn't a single legally compliant audit. Therefore, there isn't a single lawfully compliant report in any state, in the IRS, the 990, in any foreign country, because there isn't such an audit. So I'm down here in Washington making more progress with this various teams of investigators who have been poring over this for months. And, you know, come Labor Day and after Labor Day, I think we're going to see, you know, a gathering force is successful in you know, really shining a light on what's going on here.
Just yesterday, I kind of took the time to put things in context, and one of the things that I thought important to do was to point out the reporting on this huge story. It is a huge story, but there is such a concerted effort to marginalize it, to shove it to the side, to even come straight out in defense of Hillary Clinton. To that point, I bring your attention to an article today at the Business Insider, in which Mark Cuban, who is a major donor to the Clinton Foundation, and of course people should know that he's on this television program, Shark Tank, and he is the owner of the Dallas, whatever. What was the name of that team?
Mavericks.
The Dallas Mavericks. He's the NBA's Dallas Mavericks. And a pretty savvy person, you know, comes across as a very accessible guy, a very sensible guy, not given to, you know, outrages and so forth. But he is staunchly in defense of Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation. He says he sees nothing wrong with this. The allegation that the foundation served as a kind of clearinghouse, a pay-to-play, with a pay-to-play mode of operating, where people came to the foundation, got the help that they needed. What is the problem, he says? Donald Trump gets paid to use his name and his brand. He's in business, so that's okay. What is wrong with what Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton and the Clinton Foundation are alleged to have done?
Well, that's a good question, and I'm glad you bring it up. In this country, you're not wrong because you're poor, or right or correct because you're rich. And, you know, for a long time in many debates, you know, I know because Jack Welch was so successful with GE, you know, when I decided to take on GE, that was a rather courageous, in some ways, thing for me to do, because everyone thought he'd made all these billions. You know, he must know what he's doing. What he's doing must be right. There's another case where just because you made billions of dollars doesn't mean you know what's really going on. In the case of Mr. Cuban, I have never met him. I have been interacting with him over the last 24, 48 hours on Twitter because I noticed his comments, and I've implored him to go to my site, www.charlesortel.com, and read up some of the more detailed information, which he plainly has not read, to make the kind of comments that he's making. You know, when you operate a foundation, it's not like getting a driver's license. It's not like, you know, you go into the Motor Vehicles Bureau and you say, listen, I want to drive a car, and they give you a slip of paper, and then you can drive any car you want anywhere you want. When you set up a foundation and you're getting a valuable tax deduction for your donors at federal level, and then if you register properly at state level, you have to tell the IRS, you actually have to tell them specifically what you're going to do. And it is absolutely not okay to be soliciting money, in theory, to be erecting a library and a research facility in Little Rock that's already been built, and then take that money and use it for another purpose. You're not allowed to do that. And if you do take money, let's say for an endowment, which in theory they've been doing, it has to be used for an endowment. So the IRS put in place a regulatory process for these type of organizations. It dates back decades, this process, and that's why there are 1.2 million of them. And the IRS takes the view that, you know, if you read the memos and stuff, that, and the government, our federal government, takes the view that charitable activity is a good thing. We ought to promote it. It relieves, in theory, if it's done right, the burden of government by volunteers getting together, or people who don't have to make as much as government workers getting together and doing things that are important, in theory, and that are truly charitable. You're not allowed to say that, you know, you to come up with a spurious purpose, for example, like convening a very expensive party in New York, as they did starting in 2005 with this Clinton Global Initiative, and behind closed doors charging a minimum of $20,000 a person, so restricting the attendance to definitely the 0.1% and up, you're not allowed to have such a, you know, closed door event with expensive meals and wines and, you know, who knows what else going on behind closed doors, bragging about what you may do in theory. That is not a charity. So there's a precise example of something you cannot do, which they have done, and they're now shutting down. This will be the last Clinton Global Initiative, according to Bill, you know, Bill's announcements of several days or weeks ago, will be in September of this year. If it was such a great idea to do, why are they shutting it down? If they're shutting it down now, why did they do it since 2005? So there's an example of one thing you can't do. Evidently, Mr. Cuban, you know, I don't know how much experience he has with charities. I know he lives in Texas, and in Texas, the rules regulating charities are very lax. So maybe he doesn't know about New York State rules, which are very strict. Texas doesn't have, or at least it didn't have, a state income tax. New York State has very high taxes. So New York State cares a lot about whether a charity like the Clinton Foundation would go around the world, encourage American and other donors who have New York State income to make donations to this charity, which is not authorized, thereby reducing their New York State and city tax burden. They care a lot about it. New York State understands because it has, you know, a long history. There's so many big charities in New York State, the Rockefeller Foundation, Ford Foundation, other very big charities are situated in New York State. They understand that, you know, you can have bad accounting. You can have shysters get together and claim that they're, in fact, helping people when all they're really doing, as happened in Tennessee and Texas, is stealing the money. And that's why New York State puts in place very tough rules, even tougher than the IRS rules, about what kind of an audit you have to get if you're a charity. And this Clinton Foundation has never gotten a legally compliant audit, even the ones recently done by PricewaterhouseCoopers. And, you know, people will say, well, okay, PricewaterhouseCoopers, that's a big firm. They wouldn't make mistakes. We all remember there's a firm, Arthur Andersen. And Arthur Andersen is no longer in business. And the reason they're no longer in business is they got wrapped up in a fraud that was based in where? Texas, Enron. So Mr. Cuban is actually in very dangerous ground here, you know, serving as a shill for the Clinton team, without evidently having done any real work understanding what are the rules that do govern the way in which a foundation has to operate, and what are the specific rules that govern the ways in which a foundation like the Clinton Foundation has to operate if it wants to operate internationally. He has not done his homework, and I reached out to him as I said, on Twitter. He directed me towards some accounting website that I don't think is all that proficient, but I nonetheless reached out to them. I sent them emails offering, you know, to interact with them and defend my analysis. I'm sure of my ground. I think Mark Cuban is just playing politics.
In the meantime, as this storm is brewing around the Clintons, and you get the typical response from the Clinton camp, you also are getting a clear signal from the media that they're not particularly interested in looking too hard at this issue, because there's a problem of putting Hillary Clinton in a bad light. And they seem to have a vested interest. Many media organizations, mainstream media organizations, seem to have a vested interest in protecting her. So they have, insofar as they are covering this, it's also shifted away from whether the Clinton Foundation is a legal entity legally doing business to a question of, well, you know, why are people attacking the Clinton Foundation? And the political connection of pay to play. So that's where the conversation has gone. Your sense, I mean, you've dealt with AIG, you've dealt with General Electric, you've dealt with major corporations in taking them down over just nuts and bolts issues. They were doing wrong because the books said they were doing wrong. What do you see here as the great divide between what you see as the problem and what you have defined as the problem, and it is just nuts and bolts, and what the media apparently can't seem to grasp as what the problem is?
All right. Well, the media reaction starts in general with, you know, and even people who are critical of the Clinton Foundation now in the media say, well, of course, we all understand the Clinton Foundation does good work around the world. Isn't that wonderful? And that's because they're seduced by the equivalent of, you know, placards or advertisements you'd see in the subway of, a kid with, typically, it's an African child with tears running down, their faces. And underneath it says, you know, we help starving African children, so should you. That's kind of the level of the analysis that, you know, there's no granular explanation by the Clinton Foundation beyond words and pictures and, you know, fancy quotes from people and testimonials of how much money the Clinton Foundation took in for what specific purposes. Were those purposes authorized in advance by the IRS as is legally required? And if these monies were taken in, you know, to what specific uses were these monies put? And, you know, there's two levels of control normally in a lawfully operated foundation. One is the selection of a truly independent board. You know, there's a lot of talk when people, you know, on the right and the left, and I would say economically I'm on the right, when I criticize GE, it's in part, and AIG and General Motors, it's because they didn't have a sufficiently independent board that would, you know, reprimand Jack Welch and now Jeff Immelt and say, listen, bub, you know, we're paying you $20 million a year. You know, how come you have this mammoth debt? How come you're not, you know, growing the revenues? How come you're not growing the cash flows? How come you haven't set aside in the books appropriate reserves for environmental cleanup and this and that? If you have a really functioning independent board in the corporate world or in the trustee world, they will stand up and they'll say, now, wait a minute, you know, in the foundation, we are only set up here to be a library and a research facility in Arkansas. We don't have the authority from the IRS to do anything more than that. Why, Mr. Clinton, why, Mr. Magaziner, have you gone out in our name starting in around August 2002 and claimed that our foundation could fight HIV/AIDS? You'd have, on the one hand, you'd have these trustees who would indeed stand up, and you'd have a staff in the foundation that would say, you know, look, the rules are really strict on conflicts of interest. We're not allowed to take donor money solicited using the internet, the mails, the telephones, and pay for fancy private jets for Hillary Clinton and Chelsea Clinton and Bill Clinton to say that they're doing good works in Africa and elsewhere with no control. We're not allowed to do that. And so please reimburse us for this jet travel. Or, by the way, if you want to take this fancy jet and go all around the world, pay for it first and then send us a bill and maybe we'll reimburse you, maybe we won't. So those are the type of, you know, tough controls that you have. And the second level of control is an accounting firm, a real accounting firm. Now, in the beginning, they used this firm called B as in boy, K as in king, D as in dog, BKD, which if you Google that firm with fraud, you will get to all kinds of cases that this firm was involved with. Now, you know, fraud is unfortunately endemic around the world, so any accounting firm will be touched one way or another by fraud, and fraudsters are very sharp. So, you know, it's tough to defeat them. But, you know, the mistakes that BKD and management made starting October 23, 97 through December 31, 2012, which was the period of time that I believe from memory BKD was the principal auditing firm, you know, are a case study in accounting fraud. I mean, you would never, again, use a firm like BKD. Yet as recently as November 16th, 2015, Clinton Foundation claimed that they had employed BKD again to go over this historical period. Then you turn to PricewaterhouseCoopers. And, you know, I've had a lot of experience working with accounting firms. An accounting firm can only be as good as the management that is putting the books and records together. And typically the way these things work, if you have, you know, done according to, like, the best practices, you will have one accounting firm fill out the technical entries in the tax forms, and yet a different accounting firm provide the supposed independent audit. They've never done it that way. They always use the same, BKD for both, PwC for both, and, you know, the main foundation. And PwC was brought in for the 2013 set of financial statements. And, you know, I've given a very close look. I even reached out to PwC and put them on notice last 2015 that the report they prepared for 2013 that they completed in late in 14 and early in 15, that report was riddled with errors. It had not properly looked at the opening position of the Clinton Foundation, December 31st, 2012. That opening position is dependent on all prior years in which there were legendary mistakes. They hadn't looked carefully at whether the Clinton Foundation was legally authorized, whether the Clinton Foundation had strayed from its approved authorized purposes. They hadn't studied the legal trail in state after state after state where there are false and materially misleading filings on file. They hadn't looked at the international filings and the laws they'd broken internationally. They hadn't found the obvious errors, the variances that exist when you compare donor disclosures to Clinton Foundation disclosures. In short, they hadn't done the kind of work that you need to do. They had instead relied, most likely, on representations from conflicted members of the management. So this is actually, in many ways, the Clinton Foundation, while complex, even if you take it at its total size, including all affiliates, which I count the Global Fund, a big consortium effort to fight HIV/AIDS and other diseases around the world, and there are quite a few other allied charities that I think are fraudulent, even if you add them all up at $100 billion, that is one-ninth the size of GE. One-ninth the size of GE when I started in on it in 2006-07, and GE is far more complicated than the Clinton Foundation. So, you know, in this case, you know, the reason people get away with this kind of stuff is that it's past the normal comprehension and interest levels for members of the American public and the world public, and we all rely, willingly suspend our natural disbelief, and we say, okay, you know, dislike Bill Clinton, you know, and the Clintons, he's in league with the Bush family, they're, you know, in various charities, those two families, you know, they're not exactly, you know, there are not many bipartisan efforts of those two families. If they can get together on charity, well, who, you know, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. After all, what could go wrong? Well, what could go wrong is that Bill Clinton could get together with Ira Magaziner and others and, you know, not have the type of controls or test procedures in place, and they could be distributing adulterated, dangerous HIV medicines, which is what I suspect has happened since 2002.
Well, I just want to get back to the basics here, and this is the point, because the story is, quickly evolving and evolving away from its epicenter. And the epicenter is, A, the Clinton Foundation is not authorized and never had been authorized under the law, IRS law, to operate any of these initiatives at all. Correct?
That's absolutely correct. The application, the Clinton Foundation has tried, and its emissaries have tried to hide this fact. But the way you get to that is by, first of all, understanding the laws, and then looking carefully at their articles of incorporation and the original application, the complete application that was filed, I believe it was December 23rd, 1997. Now, that application makes crystal clear that this was an entity formed under a separate statute to form a presidential archive. And then they added in the idea that they'd also have a related research facility and that this would be based in Little Rock. Then what they did is, in order to, somebody told them as they started to raise money, listen, if you want to solicit outside Arkansas, you've got to fill out separate registration forms. So they did that. They filled them out in, I have the one for New York they did concerning 1998. I have the one they did in Minnesota concerning 1998. I have other ones that they filed, which in every case they said, yes, we're going to be a presidential archive. In Massachusetts, they made it crystal clear that they were going to be a presidential archive. You have to, for your state forms, you have to fill out additional information beyond the federal forms, where you have options of ticking off different boxes explaining what your purposes are. And the ones for fighting HIV/AIDS or health or doing anything international were not ticked off on the state filings. They were not ticked off on the federal filings. So it's very clear in the early years this thing was just to be based in Little Rock. It was just to be studying the historical period when Bill was president from 93 to 2001 and to have a research facility there and to hold all the different, the memos, the letters, the emails, the pictures, the movies, whatever. Those are our property, actually, our U.S. government, taxpayer property. They were to be housed in this complex. That's it. It's crystal clear.
So it is then arguable that the Clinton Foundation has been operating outside of the law the minute they attached all these other initiatives under the umbrella of the Clinton Foundation, which have nothing to do with the original intent, the stated intent and purpose of the Clinton Foundation.
It's absolutely true. And you could see that, it's interesting. I found with the Clintons that whenever there's information missing that should be there, you can be very certain that that information is incriminating. So in the case of their main website, foundations in this internet age, public charities, they communicate with the public using the internet. And the Clinton Foundation website is chock-a-block full with information, some of which I'm told by people who watch it every day and work with me and are more technical than I am, they've been taking information or trying to take it off the site, not realizing you can never do that, that there's always a way to find the information that once was on the site. But anyway, the stuff that's missing is for this key period, October 23, 1997, year by year through December 31, 2004, there are no financial audits on their site. And there had to be, because from the very beginning, the Clinton Foundation raised, by their declarations, well more than the minimum required, where the requirements kick in for producing an audit. So I, asked myself, where are these, in quotes, audits? And when you just have to start searching state by state by state. And I can reveal on this show, and I think I may have mentioned it before, but I can say again, this missing information is on the Commonwealth of Massachusetts state regulatory websites. There's two separate ones where you can get the stuff. And when you look at these, in quotes, audits that are up there, what you discover is that these audits state in plain layman's English, we have prepared this accounting information using accounting standards that are not allowed within the United States of America. It's just flatly illegal to do that. And that's the period, October 23, 1997, to December 31st, 2004, when the main foundation complex was built in Little Rock. So there's no reason to use standards that are not allowed inside the United States to account for it. Now, when you look more deeply into the descriptions, what you see very clearly is statements in various places on the so-called 990, the tax forms, that they had not changed their purpose from the original purposes authorized by the IRS, which were to be an archive and a research facility. They did not change it. They say that themselves. They say that in state filings. So what they've been trying to do, the Clintons, is misdirect from the truth. And the truth is, as you say earlier, Eutrice, this thing has strayed from its authorized purposes as early as July 2002, when Bill and Ira Magaziner, who were neither of them trustees or officers of the main Clinton Foundation, went around the world and said, hey, we are operating in the name of the Clinton Foundation, now a fight against HIV/AIDS. And then they went off and they put, with Doug Band, they put their idea of convening people in a meeting to brag about their charitable goals. With Ira again in 2006, they decided they were going to fight climate change. Again, that's not approved. And they've had this, like, twisting array of purposes that, in some cases, it all sounds similar, different initiatives and ideas and this, none of which has ever actually lawfully been approved by the IRS.
But all of which have generated substantial interest and investment, actually, through donations from governments and individuals and from corporations, the Clinton Health Access Initiative, the Clinton Global Initiative, and the Clinton Global Initiative University, the Clinton Global Citizens Awards, the Clinton Climate Initiative, the Clinton Development Initiative, the Alliance for a Healthier Generation, Clinton Justra Sustainable Growth Initiative, Clinton Health Matters Initiative, Disaster Relief, we know what a disaster that was in Haiti, and the No Ceilings Project among them. These ideas were formulated because, one, somebody sensed there was a need to serve a community or communities that were distressed in these areas and could use some help. And it really does speak to the philanthropic spirit to say, well, we've done well, and we are concerned about the world, and we want to do something to give back and so forth. These kinds of appeals, I mean, the hard sell and the soft sell work real well to get people to come up off a lot of money. Many governments donated in total hundreds of millions and billions of dollars to these various initiatives, which were illegally constituted, illegally operating, had no authority whatsoever. Is it possible that, well, they kind of forgot to file the forms, or they got bad advice from the people they hired and were not told that there are certain things that you can't do?
Well, I mean, I actually, again, this is why the fraud area is, it's a sad area, but it's an interesting area. So if you think about the case of the Madoff, Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme, right? And you look at it in hindsight, you know, there's the smaller fraud. That one was, by depending on how you look at it, whether you look at it, you know, before money's recovered through litigation or just gross, it's on the order of between 40 and 60 billion in that case. And that was a case where a lot of very smart people, really smart people, rich people, and smart people, generally careful with their own money, broke a lot of rules. I mean, the first rule they broke was, in many cases, they were so greedy, they gave all of their money to Bernie Madoff. The second is that, you know, in my world, in my main world, if you tell me that I can generate, you know, that you can generate above average rates of investment return year after year after year, I will immediately say the chances are that's a fraud. Because it's very difficult to, you know, there are a lot of people around the world competing to do well very aggressively in the investment management business. They are all, you know, ruthless is too strong a word. Some of them are ruthless, but they're pros. And to think that in any industry, whatever it is, media, whatever, that you could always be number one for, let's say, 25, 30, 35 years against thousands of competitors, you know, it sort of taxes credulity, right? So in this case, you know, the same thing is the case, that, you know, you put together something that sounds too good to be true, and people are not, you know, sufficiently cynical about it. And next thing you know, you'll snare Bill Gates, or you'll snare, you know, one government. And the thing kind of builds on itself. People say, well, Bill Gates is a smart guy, and he why would he lend his name to this if it were a problem? And then you suddenly let your hair down. And that's what happened here with this Clinton Foundation. I mean, you know, we have to remember, people say, well, you know, this is, these are great people. And they said, no, this is the only time so far in history that you've had a power couple put together a foundation when they were broke in the White House needing money, that raised money in that controversial period of America's history, 97, 8, et cetera, when he was impeached but not convicted, et cetera. When she then decided to be a senator, when it was clear even then to people on the left that Hillary Clinton was going to run again, this is the first time in history that you've had an ex-president married to somebody with realistic prospects to become president of the United States. And people around the world understand that the president of the United States has a lot of power. And it's a lot cheaper to send small money, particularly if you're a government leader leaving office like a Tony Blair or, you know, the leader of Norway, you pick these, or Australia, you pick these governments that, you know, were leaders, saw in the Clintons maybe a team that would ultimately get into power. Very easy to use OPM, other people's money, taxpayers' money, to support the Clinton Foundation if by doing so you're lured into the suspicion of believing that Hillary Clinton, when she's president, is going to help you out and help you out in ways. I mean, the President of the United States makes a decision, let's say totally objectively, with no political influence. The President of the United States controls levers of power that, you know, have benefits that in some ways are priceless. I mean, how valuable is it to have the next president of the United States stand up and say, you know what, we're going to put a stick in Vladimir Putin's eye and we are going to, protect Poland and the Baltic states and this and that. We are not going to retreat, as it seems maybe Donald Trump wants to do, for backing our NATO allies. I mean, that's a very priceless benefit. Or alternatively, you know, if the United States decides to mount one economic initiative, let's say we decide to rebuild the Middle East, how valuable is that to the premier Middle East construction firms? It's very valuable. So, the President of the United States has enormous economic power, enormous economic influence, and this is the first time, as I say, in history that this sort of an animal, you know, came into being, and it's never been regulated properly. Witness it's moving from being an archive to all these different initiatives that are not properly, they are illegally and improperly regulated. There's no global regulator of charities. And so the team around the Clintons realized this. It's a perfect fundraising vehicle. And that's why I think, you know, you mentioned earlier, Yatrice, that the newspapers, in particular, are not really focusing on it. Well, actually, in the last 2 weeks or so, a number of, I would characterize them as left-leaning, hard left-leaning newspapers, editorial boards have reached a conclusion that the Clinton Foundation either needs to be shut down should Hillary win, or shut down now, or have its fundraising curtailed now. New York Times is the most recent one. They came forward hours ago and suggested that the Clintons needed to, the Bill and Chelsea needed to get out of the Clinton Foundation now, and that fundraising from foreign governments and corporations needs to stop now. I'll take that a step further. You know, if the aims of the Clinton Foundation are so noble, if they are going to get authorized, let them be prosecuted by people who have nothing to do with the Clinton family and their hangers-on. That is to say, Bruce Lindsay and Iron Magazine, all these Clinton cronies who are political supporters who benefited from the political patronage of the Clintons. Strip all those people out of this foundation. And if their aims are so noble, let them get authorized if they can be by the IRS and let them move forward.
But even in making these arguments, they're still going along the route of, well, it would look better ethically. They're not saying, have crimes been committed here, deliberately committed here, prosecutable crimes? Is this, in fact, the largest charity fraud in the world and that has been operating in our time where we are supposed to be able to do something about it? Which brings me to the question, which I raised yesterday. None of this, it seems to me, could have happened without somebody raising a flag within the Obama administration. I mean, you have somebody who was married to a president with some serious ethical problems. Hillary by then had accrued quite a few of her own. She is being considered for the top diplomatic post in the country, a cabinet-level position. One assumes some very, very fine-tooth comb type of vetting should have occurred there. The Clinton Foundation by this time had been in full operation. And I find it hard to believe that President Obama and his administration knew nothing about it. What do you think?
I think that's a great point, Yatrice. And, you know, going back to your opening comments about Mr. Cuban, this message is direct for you, Mark. Go and get your people to look at the Memorandum of Understanding. There's two versions of it. There's one dated, in theory, December 16th, 2008, and there's another one dated November 16th, 2008. Get your best lawyers to explain to you, if you don't already know, why anybody would ever create a so-called Memorandum of Understanding as opposed to a binding enforceable contract to regulate these conflicts. And ask yourself, why is it that, as you say, Yatrice, in November of 2008, 12 days, I think, after the election, why was Team Obama prepared? Why was Valerie Jarrett educated enough from the outside, not yet controlling the IRS or Department of Justice, from the outside, to accept the notion that on that date the Clinton Foundation was in the kind of state the MOU suggests it was in? You know, everything's hunky-dory with HIV/AIDS and all these regulations and the finances are fantastic and everything. When, in fact, you can't go on the Clinton Foundation website and find this information because it's purposefully hidden. But if you go on the New York State Charity Bureau search website and you punch in the following number, 31-1580204, that's 31-1580204, and you go then and look at the annual report for 2007, which shows in the complete state how bad the Clinton Foundation was functioning, you'll see that the Clinton Foundation was hemorrhaging money on financial statements which are hidden from the general public. Look at the very back at the so-called combining financial statements and ask yourself why those aren't consolidated financial statements as they should be, or consolidating, removing double counting. They're combining, which are also non-compliant with New York law. Nonetheless, you get a picture looking at it and what horrible state, just from the first pass, 30,000-foot view of the Clinton Foundation, it was losing money. And when foundations lose substantial sums of money, there's great pressure normally on the trustees to make sure that monies that are solicited are not used other than for their intended purposes, that everything's hunky-dory, because when you lose money, you're in trouble when you operate a foundation, generally speaking. Then, Mr. Cuban and others, go over to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts Corporation Search site and punch in, under Corporation Search, the last name Magaziner, and then look at the filing for the Clinton Foundation HIV/AIDS Initiative, Inc., which shows that the piece that had been receiving all these hundreds of millions of dollars to supposedly fight HIV/AIDS had had its license to operate involuntarily revoked on March 31st, 2008. When you look at that and you have some lawyers who understand New York charity law, Massachusetts charity law, international charity law, you will see that the Clinton Foundation was basically not a going concern on the very date that Valerie Jarrett signed this memorandum of understanding, whether it was the 16th of November 2008, which I think is the date she did sign it, or a later version that Politico puts forward that looks like somebody hand-wrote over the 1 in 11 to turn it into a 2 and make it December 16th. All right, so to your question, Utrice, the Clinton Foundation, anybody can look at these filings, anybody who understands charity law, and will conclude, Clinton Foundation, desperate trouble. Now Barack Obama is sworn in, I think, around the 20th of January 2009. Probably took his team a bit of time to get into the IRS, Justice Department, and have the ability to familiarize itself with the full files, which I'm sure they could get on the Clinton Foundation. And suddenly there's no information. There are no emails back and forth from anybody to anyone else questioning, you know, how could it be the Clinton Foundation is in the desperate shape that the papers, the state filing suggests it's in. But then by September 4th, 2009, suddenly we're restructuring the Clinton Foundation or attempting to do it. We're creating a new Clinton Global Initiative in Arkansas on the 4th of September 2009. We create a new Clinton Health Access Initiative on the 29th of September 2009. We create a new Alliance for a Healthier Generation in 2010. There's all these moves, these radical moves that don't make any sense and are not done properly, yet there's no emails back and forth to the person who's supposed to clear conflicts under the MOU or to any of the people, either from the Obama administration to the Clinton Foundation, its various people. No emails. Why are there no emails?
But in the meantime, you have a very sympathetic ear and a very... a very receptive friend at the IRS who is a fellow appointee of Barack Obama. In terms of the investigative part of it, the Clinton conglomerate is in full mode accepting donations from all over the place and, in fact, functioning as a lobby, as a lobbying group, accepting foreign money for performing certain favors at the same time that she was Secretary of State. So you have all these red flags again. These are warning signals, and the Obama administration does not show any indication of discomfort with these unresolved matters or that it even addressed these matters.
Well, I have been, as some of your listeners will discover when they read my columns in the Washington Times, I have been sharply critical of the Obama administration for many reasons. My background is in economics, business, and international matters, and I think the Obama administration has made a lot of mistakes in all those areas. But what I will say, reading just what I have read in the public domain, Barack and Michelle Obama strike me as people who are, you know, thoughtful, caring, good parents. And they have been generous to the Clinton Foundation. I mean, they gave $200,000+ in 2010 to the Clinton-Bush-Haiti Initiative. They took a tax deduction. They got a benefit at federal in Washington, D.C., if they're residents of D.C., which I assume they are, level. So they have been generous and thoughtful, and they tried to do right, helping the Clintons out in an initiative that could have gone well, but I think has gone badly wrong. And Barack and his people have set up this Barack Obama Foundation that hopes to operate going forward. So I bring that up to say that he, his family, and his team have a major league conflict of interest here. If you were to pursue this to its logical conclusion, you would discover that Barack and Michelle owe the IRS money because their deduction taken to the Clinton-Bush-Haiti Fund was illegally authorized and operated foundation as well. Additionally, when you pull on the string of the Clinton Foundation, the implications of what you find are going to affect the Barack Obama Foundation going forward. And that one, I will point out, when you look at its articles of incorporation and read the legal textbooks and precedents, you'll discover that it likely was authorized improperly, that stated purposes are way too broad, normally would not comply, would not get authorized, but because he's the president, and controls the IRS, the IRS does his bidding, it would seem, the thing gets sailing through. Now, going forward, depending on who wins the election, Normally, the way this what happens is the IRS has a right at any time to go back under the existing law and say, wait a minute, this application wasn't compliant. We are going to reconsider the authorization that we made, and we may revoke it. So for two reasons, the contribution of the Clinton-Bush Haiti Fund and the idea that the Barack Obama Foundation may, in fact, be set up to emulate the Clinton Foundation are reasons why, you know, some are calling for a special prosecutor here.
But actually, the question is that also a kind of sleight of hand? Because the people, it seems to me, with real authority and immediate authority would be the attorneys general of the various states in which the foundation has been operating.
You are absolutely right, Utrecht. You know, most people don't understand this, but in our 50 states, I believe there are only four that don't regulate charities that aggressively, one, I think, being Texas. But many of them have quite strict regimes. One I'll give you that you wouldn't think of, at least I wouldn't think of off the top of my head, is Georgia. The state of Georgia has very tough rules on registering. You register a charity and make false and materially misleading statements, as the Clinton Foundation did and as they continue to do, normally the state of Georgia comes down on you like a ton of bricks. And any state of these states that regulate charities, any state that finds that you're soliciting within the state and that your forms are false and materially misleading has an absolute right to get as much material as they need. No judge can stand, you know, between, I don't believe, these attorneys general and stop the investigation. So you're right, Utrecht. You know, whether it's the state of Arkansas, where many Clinton charities are domiciled, or Delaware, or, you know, other states in which the Clinton Foundation solicits, like California and Illinois and New York, New Jersey, any one of these states could and frankly should and is doing the citizens in its respective states disservice by not going in, investigating, getting to the bottom, resisting the siren calls of Mark Cuban and others who haven't studied the facts and are just, you know, making 100,000 foot above the surface of the earth observations about the state of this thing. These state attorney generals need to dig in now.
We're getting close to time, but I do want to ask where you think this matter is going next. What do you think will happen?
Well, I think what's happening, Utrecht, is that, you know, we have this last week of summer here. Most people are wrestling, hornswoggling their children back to school or college, enjoying, you know, as we should all try to, as Americans, enjoy the last moments of summer 2016. I think come Tuesday after Labor Day, I think I know of work that's happening by various, you know, investigative bodies. I think you're going to see a lot of attention focused on this, heightened attention focused, starting next week through the election, as people really should focus on. You shouldn't be able to get away with claiming you're doing all this good work, but then withholding the reports that you have to file because they're defective, and think that you could waltz through an election and nobody will notice it. I think a lot of attention is going to be placed on this. I would call on Democrats to consider reaching out to Marsha Blackburn and her staff and asking, you know, why it is that they've pointed focus on this. I think this is an area where Democrats and Republicans can get together and use this as a case study and a textbook case how to stamp out charity fraud. Charity fraud is a despicable crime.
What of Barack Obama? Do you expect him to remain low on this, or do you expect that pressure would be put on him to disclose what he knew and when he knew it about the Clinton Foundation?
Well, I think, you know, Barack Obama, interestingly, has said that he's not going to the final edition of the Clinton Global Initiative, which I think happens around September 16th, 18th, that time frame. I wonder why he needed to make that gratuitous comment. As a guess, you know, it's tough to move on to what he's going to do next. He will resist having to talk, and maybe he will get away without having to talk to investigators. But I would guess that Congress and others are going to take a very hard look at why the IRS did not discipline this under the Bush administration as well as under the Obama administration. This thing has been operating almost 20 years outside the law.
And finally, for you, I mean, you've been looking forensically at major corporations. You were principally responsible for exposing fraud at AIG and General Electric and many other corporations doing the wrong thing. What did this, or what has this experience done for you personally?
Well, I got into it by accident, but I see an opportunity. I'm going to start on next year in 2017, God willing, to help people in a new business venture, managing their wealth, thinking about good places to put money in charity, and getting into some of the untold tales in American history that I think really showcase this country as an exemplary place. But, you know, I just saw this. I couldn't just sit by and do nothing. And I decided I would, you know, do what I've been doing and exposing this. I appreciate your help, Eutrice, and bringing this to the attention of the public. And I'm going to do a lot more in coming days and weeks.
I'm sure you will. Charles Ortel, charlesortel.com, O-R-T-E-L. Thanks a lot, Charles. And we'll talk again, hopefully, very soon.
Thank you, Eutrice.
Thanks. That brings us to the end of our program today. Much was shared today. And I hope you're banking this information. And frankly, you're way ahead of most of the country on these things because of the detailed analysis and information shared by Charles Ortel, who since February last year has been looking doggedly into the operations of the Clinton Foundation and its many, many affiliated programs. Stay tuned. Coming up next, The Infectious Myth with David Crow. And you can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories, at gmail.com. Let me know what you think about the program. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.